It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, October the 19th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com website. You can contact me there, get our newsletter, join our chat, be a premium subscriber, free, whatever works for you. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. A little bit of chill on the pumpkin as fall has arrived. The playoffs are in full swing, and we're finally here at the show. We've been talking a lot, you know, post-mortem, the offense, getting into run prevention on the offensive side. We're going to start talking about the pitching today. I know the Mets made a couple of moves with the coaching staff. We'll get into that later. I'm not going to make that the biggest part of the show. The playoffs, are we learning anything from watching the playoffs? Has the game evolved? Are things going back to the future? We'll see. And I know all the talk is about an ace, Tarik Skubal, Paul Skenes. The big news, obviously, with the Tigers being eliminated, Brewers being eliminated, can the Mets or anybody else, there'll be other teams involved, grab one of these pitchers that are heading to free agency in about a year? What will it cost? Everybody's talking about that. We'll get into that and more here at the Talking Mets podcast. So if you've been paying attention, and I mean, why not? Why wouldn't you be paying attention a little bit, right? You've seen this postseason, the Dodgers all of a sudden, exactly as I had predicted, a champion, what a champion does is go out there, flex their muscles, become a very, very tough out in the postseason. And I'll be honest with you, I just don't see anybody beating them right now. And, you know, we've talked about this time and time again. They're on this 90s Bulls, late 90s Yankees. You know, they're on a run where they're at a point, you know, Lakers in the 80s. You want to go through Patriots when they were at their top, whatever sport, you know, Montreal Canadiens back in the day, whatever you want to talk about. They've built over the last decade. And even while they were building, they were very successful in providing pennants and big moments for the fans. But they've built it where now they're kind of churning out this machine. And there may not be any end. They're talking about going after Kyle Tucker. You know, similar to how they went after Soto, they're probably going to be looking for deferred contracts. They're going to be looking to bring in big players and keep this thing going. And the biggest fear you have right now is, especially if you're a Mets fan, this is not like the American League. The American League could play their tournament, and then you just got to beat the Dodgers in the World Series. They have to get through their tournament, and no matter how good the Dodgers are, it's still a tournament series. And I know this sounds crazy, but when you look at you know, the playoffs here, teams like the Mets and San Diego, who I know struggle down the stretch to get through Miami and whatever, but when in a short series where everything is different, where you could go and you could mix and you could match, I think those are the kind of teams that would have had the best chance of winning. Now, you'd say, well, why aren't they there? Well, that caught, you know, Padres is the variability of the tournament. The Mets, we've been through that. So it's not like I think the Mets are that far off, but I think they have to have a serious look this offseason as to, okay, how are they going to balance their farm system that some have as a top five? I think it was ESPN has it as a top five, and some really interesting players. Their wallet and their money, which could impact them this year and years future in terms of payroll flexibility and luxury tax and potentially roster movement if there's a cap, and blend all these things together to be able to go out and compete now with the Dodgers without taking a step back. And I think that's where this offseason is so critical, because standing pat, clearly the carpet ride of 24 is not going to push you any further. You have serious deficits on the roster, especially on the pitching side. And you might not have enough depth or kids, and clearly early in the season you didn't, because they didn't start relying on them until late, to plug some of those gaps, whether it be on the offensive side or the defensive or the pitching side. Now, one of the things the Dodgers have brought back, and let me preface this by saying, I do not believe the Dodgers rotation long-term will stay healthy. I don't think Ohtani will stay healthy. I'm pretty sure Glasnow's not going to stay healthy. I can't speak for Yamamoto. Historically, he's been healthy. And Snell is a guy that has had inconsistent performance and some health issues as well. So I don't think it'll stay healthy. But what you saw, and part of this dominance, I believe, was not that they were load managed throughout the year. They had injuries that forced it. But I'm sure the Dodgers would load manage their starting pitching. Is that in this past series, and again, keep in mind the Brewers, as I said during the regular season, were a bit of a BABIP luck team. They're a team that I feel was in the mid-80s, low-80s team, similar to where the Mets landed. They just got very hot during the month of August. Good bullpen, some good pitchers. That always keeps you in ball games. And trust me, a team like that during the regular season that has good defense and good pitching, they stay in games, a dink and a dunk and a blast here, and all of a sudden they win a ball game. So I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying I knew that team wasn't built to go long in the postseason. And Bob Uecker's, the spirit of Bob Uecker is not going to get you far, okay? But so I'll preface it by saying that. But in today's baseball, I don't care who you're playing. It's a postseason team. It's the championship series. You got a guy going a complete game in Yamamoto. You got Snell going into the eighth inning. You got six dominant innings, a Babe Ruth performance by Ohtani. Truly a Babe Ruth performance. That's all you could call it. This is harkens back to Babe Ruth in the 20s. Think about that. And then Glasnow, who would be a top starter on a lot of teams in this league, and actually, you could argue, would have been the Mets' ace going into the sixth. He's the one that won't give you as much length, and you have to manage him a little bit, but a dominant pitcher when he's on, as dominant as there is out there. So it's almost like the starting pitching is coming back. You saw Tarek Skubal, who we'll get into, and what he did with the Tigers, and even George Kirby, and the dominance that you see with Seattle and how their pitching has carried them. You know, yeah, Toronto's put up some more points on the board here, but that's a great offense. An old school Kevin Costner for the love of the game outing by Max Scherzer. Starting pitching has been a bigger story this postseason than maybe like last year where the Mets and the Dodgers, the Mets are getting these scrappy, five or six innings, you know, relying on the bullpen, relying a lot on Diaz, mix and match from scrappy mid-tier veteran starters. The Dodgers using the bullpen. A lot of people forget they use Walker Buehler out of the bullpen. He's really a starter to help them beat the Yankees. Even, you know, throughout that series, he was able to start kind of like a pseudo-opener against the Mets after missing most of the year with Tommy John surgery. So it wasn't a complete waste, but they had some really good arms coming out of that bullpen at any given time. But they even knew winning with bullpen. And you saw that a little bit, even with Toronto against the Yankees as they were trying to finish off that series. It's a good starting pitching performance that takes away the variability of relievers who, regardless of how good they are, going to the bullpen in the fifth inning is exactly what you want from the opposition. Anytime you're a team, regular season and June game, you know, early season game, postseason game, you get into those bullpens early, you have a much better chance of winning. I don't care how good the bullpens are. And with the way these bullpens are being used, not just the games and the innings, it's the times they get hot. By the time you get to October, you may not have the same level of performance that you had throughout the regular season. I mean, they're human beings. They have their gas tank get empty too. Now, that's not to diminish the bullpen because I'll stand by what I've said. Bullpens ultimately in the ninth inning will be determined by a closer. That's it. Edwin Diaz, if he's on the roster next year, and as long as he's on the roster and an elite closer, he will be who will be on the mound most likely if the Mets win a championship. And he'll be on the mound when the Mets clinch a postseason series. And I think the only reason he wasn't on the mound in Milwaukee was because they needed him to make sure that there was a game to close out that night in Milwaukee when Pete Alonso was the story and David Peterson was the closer that night. It was just reversed because they needed their best pitcher at that point to get them out of it. So that's not going to change. But what has to change is the Mets have to get serious about starting pitching. They cannot go back into a season. And this is not going to be easy. Out of all the tasks that Stearns has had since he's been here, this might be the most risky. This might be the most expensive. This might be the one that pushes him out of his comfort zone when it comes to prospects, but they have to fix their philosophy in starting pitching. They have given out no long-term contracts. They've tried. Yamamoto was, they were there with the Dodgers. They couldn't put it over the finish line, and they weren't ready yet to offer Yamamoto, not only with location, but with organization, what the Dodgers can. And they don't have Ohtani. Remember that? That's a big part of it, too. They don't have Ohtani, and not having Ohtani plays a big part into this whole thing. And they've made some efforts to Sakhi, but by and large, whether it be Burns or Snell or any pitcher that got a decent contract, Fried, and I think Fried would have been somebody they might have looked at a little bit more if the Soto situation wasn't in play. They've shied away. They haven't even been part of it. And what you hear is that Stearns doesn't want to give 6 or 7 year deals to pitchers. I don't blame them. They're more than likely going to go bad. Everybody talks about Pete Alonso and that contract. I'll put a lot of money down that Pete will be productive later in his contract over a Max Fried. That I know. I feel very confident in that. You've already seen Burns get hurt, Snell get hurt. You've seen it. So I understand that. But now you're starting to hear on the market, there's not much on the market, but there's a couple of interesting names on the market. You possibly have an ace available out there. You may have burgeoning top ace types that are a couple of years away from free agency that may become available, depending on the team's finances. And I think there's a lot up in the air right now with collective bargaining coming up in a year. So it makes me wonder how that's going to play in terms of the hot stove. But David Stearns, if he wants to start to really make a play, unless he believes, and I think this would be extremely risky, could go horribly bad, and could turn the Mets' 2026 season sideways before it even starts if they're not ready. Unless you believe Tong, McClain, and Sproat, the small sample size you saw, with McClain being the only one that showed that he's ready, and maybe more than ready, if you want to go into the season with your 2026 version of Generation K, and then you have potentially some depth that will need some seasoning, the Jack Winnegars, the Jonathan Santucci's, the Will Watsons, who knows if they're ready, but maybe by midseason or August, like the guys this year they are, and then you run it back with your very good Manaea, your very good Holmes, your who the hell knows what you get, Senga, guys like that, Peterson, an innings guy. You want to run with that back. That's an extremely risky proposition. Now, it'll keep you flexible, it'll keep your payroll flexible. It'll probably mitigate the bad money on your budget. Now, we don't really know what that looks like. We know Cohen's got a lot of money, but he doesn't want to piss it away. We know that. And maybe beef up the offense a little bit and beef up the bullpen a little bit. That's a pathway. But I think that's a pathway that could produce more of the same. And I don't think that's a pathway that could be sold right now. Now, you don't want to run your team based on the media and the fans. We talk about that all the time. But it's clear the teams that were going far, even look at the Cubs, who did lose that series, but had really good starting pitching. That's what you need to do. Everybody talks about defense, and they're always, oh, the Mets can't sign this guy because he's bad defensive. The Mets defense, from what I understand, the Mets defense is middle of the pack. It was bad late in the year, and it was bad because your center fielder came over from Baltimore and was bad. You've had a third baseman that was a disaster, and Pete had probably his worst defensive year, and you're focused on, and truthfully, out of those three positions, two are not as important as the one in center field. I'm not as worried about the corners. I'm definitely not worried about Lindor yet. And I don't think you're that bad at second base. So to sit here and over-talk about the defense really overshadows the issue is that your starting pitching was non-competitive. Your starting pitching could not, and I'm repeating myself, and you guys know it, your starting pitching could not hold leads in August against a bad Atlanta team at home. Think about that. At home. So I'm not going to do what everybody else is doing, because that's not the way we do this show. Ever since the news came down that Tarek Skubal may be traded because he's got a year left, he's a Boris client, and the Tigers are $250 million apart, whatever it is, according to John Heyman, everybody's going to do a show proposing trades about Skubal, talking about Skubal, making the whole show about Skubal. And I don't want to do that. We'll talk about Skubal plenty, Tarek Skubal. And am I saying his name? Skubal, whatever. I don't care. I'll learn it when he gets here. And I know Paul Skeens is another name that comes up. And I still don't think the Pirates, unless they get a haul, a crazy overpay that sets them up for 5 years, I don't think that he's going to get traded. But you want to throw him out there. You want to throw Sandy Alcantara, assuming that you believe the Alcantara you saw at the end of the year is the 2022 version, which was the top five pitcher in baseball. You want to throw him in there, fine. Those are the impactful guys. If you're just going to talk about what really, outside of Skubal, which I think is a good chance from what you read, of possibly getting something done, to really, I think, very difficult scenarios with Alcantara and Skeens, then you're just having a pipe dream fantasy show. That's not what we do here. What we're going to do is really look at the rotation, see how you're going to rebuild it. And I already gave you here in the open how you know, one pathway is be conservative, go with the kids, maybe go after a couple of veteran arms, similar to what you've done over the past couple of off seasons with Quintana and Minaya and Holmes, and try to see whoever you bring in that, you know, now it's all about analytics with the Mets. It's clear, whether it's on the offensive side or the pitching side. Drive lines running the pitching side. You're going to have a drive line organization when it comes to the pitching. You're going to have an analytics-based offensive team. That's, you know, the old school days of Buck and whoever was on Buck's staff, and, you know, back when Mickey Callaway was the manager, and all these, you know, old school baseball guys that say, you know, I bring the old school and I can learn the analytics. That's over. It's not happening. So if you want to go that route and you think you could win, well, you know what? You're putting a lot of faith in your lab. You're putting a lot of faith in your coaching staff, which clearly was at a deficit this past year. Again, I don't want to get into that now. I know some people have asked about the coaching staff. That's a pathway. But to me, the right pathway is to look at the staff in total and say, okay, you have some components that are decent. Look, they came with the two wins of a World Series in 24 with a very similar staff without kids that were ready, like McClain. And I don't think you're dealing with a total zero. Everybody overstates where the Mets are at. The Mets struggled pitching-wise, but on June 12th, when they had one of the best records in baseball, and Singer was on the mound shutting down Washington, nobody was talking about that. It all unraveled from that point forward. So when you look at the rotation, whether they had sustained some success, made the postseason, and based on the Pythagorean win-loss, the Mets were probably under by three games. Three games of bad luck. And I wrote over at the Beyond the Mic premium content, which if you guys want to give it a look, you can, that they might have even been able to be better if they had just reconstructed their lineup a little bit. And that's something that's not for today's show. But you could go over to the Beyond the Mic, you go over to the premium content, and I talked about the lineup, particularly with Soto in the leadoff spot, how that might have made an impact. Those are things that are around the margins type of situations. The real impact is improving the rotation. So what do the Mets need to do? Well, here we'll start with what they need to do, and then we're going to get into some ideas and names that I have right now looking at the chessboard, realistic ideas, some which might be more of a push than others, but realistic. Now, number one, pursuing an ace, I think, is in the Mets' best interest. But I don't think you go and have to get an ace at all costs this offseason and just rip apart your entire roster and farm system. If Tarek Skubal is the best option out there, absolutely you go after Tarek Skubal. You want to inquire about Paul Skeens? Why wouldn't you? You have a top five farm system in baseball. You have to use it one way or the other. You have to continue to procure and develop it, or you use it to get in elite top talent that is in prime. And that's what Skubal is. Skeens hasn't even hit his early prime. Alcantara is a cost-controlled, coming-off-an-injury pitcher in the same division. I still think Miami, they seem a little bit, they have a lot of moxie there with Bendix coming from Tampa. He's seen what the Rays have been able to do in the American League. He probably says, I could do that with the Marlins in the National League. Why give up a guy that's cost-controlled right now if you have any kind of designs on making the postseason, and possibly with a good pitching staff, and they have some good arms. Do what Milwaukee did. Get to a championship series. Maybe your pitchers are better, and you're able to dink and dunk your way to a pennant. Miami's done it before in 03. They won it with big free agents in 97. 03 was more about some of the young kids they had there. So remember, it's been done in Miami before. They have some history there. So you definitely want to chase an ace. The other thing I think the Mets and Stearns need to do is, who is the next player to make that jump to beat Tarek Skubal? 3 years ago, Tarek Skubal didn't make the jump yet. He made the jump the last couple of years. And at one point, Sandy Alcantara was a promising pitcher, and then he made the jump. why not get in on a player that has talent, is good, but might be the next thing? Think about how Houston got Cole, and then the Yankees signed Cole from Houston after that. They were really good at that. I mean, the Astros wound up getting Charlie Morton. Now, he was a different type of thing, and he wound up becoming a top of the rotation guy. And there's differences between Cole and Morton, but think about that. Can the Mets do what Houston did and get the next player to jump? I think it's critically important, regardless of what they do with the first two, is they got to add innings to the rotation. You cannot rely on your current starters like Holmes, like Peterson, to be able to maybe be that 195 to 200 inning guy. Now, there's guys on the market. That's something you could sign. And I think that regardless of what the price is, and prices on pitchers are going to get into the $20 to $25 million easily. Easily. I mean, a league average pitcher is going to make $15 million. We've talked about maybe more, maybe $16, $17, around that. I think the qualifying offer is like $21 million. That's kind of like baseline now. So keep that in mind. So there are guys, bulldogs in the rotation, guys with some upside, better than Holmes, better than Manaea, but could give you innings and possibly be more of a, I'm not saying an ace, but more top of the rotation, you know, 2.5, 2, something like that. And at times could be ace-like when they're on. Who's your keepers in this rotation? That's the other thing. Because if you're going to make any deals or you're going to be bringing in a free agent, at some point, you're going to have numbers depth and not everybody could be in the bullpen. And I know you need depth. And maybe that's where a Senga, they all of a sudden manage him like an afterthought, a sixth starter, and they float him in and float him out. That's probably what you got to do with him at this point after you've seen. So maybe they over-pitching. Maybe they bring in six starters. They use some of their kids for depth, things of that nature, if you know, depending on who's brought back. Because you're going to have to make deals here. If you make deals, you're going to lose guys. So you got to decide who's their keeper. And then after what you saw with Scherzer and Toronto on Friday, is there a old school, I call them the Kevin Costner for the love of the game type of pitchers? Are there guys out there? You know, maybe a Justin Verlander reunion now in a different kind of way makes sense. A Max Scherzer, these are veterans. They're going to give you everything that's left in the tank. You're not relying on them to be an ace. You're relying on them to be that old school veteran that could go out there and give you a good performance, help mentor some young pitchers on the pitching staff. I thought Scherzer, I know he's prickly. I know people can't stand the fact that he came to the Mets and he was a total abomination down the stretch. He was injured. He was entering his decline. Like Tom Glavin decided to enter his decline after he got his 300th win in 2007. Scherzer decided to enter it late 2022. You got the last vestiges of elite Scherzer that season early in the season. And that just happens. When he went down in August with an injury, we didn't know that that was the end of it. So that's kind of how you have to build this rotation. Now, what are those names? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll address the ace and Skubal and what would it take and what the Mets should and shouldn't do. We'll go back into history and look at the other times the Mets have gone after aces. And this is not going to be a situation where it's you give up, hey, take whatever you want and let's bring them in and see what they could do to sign them. You got to be smart with this. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. So everybody's like, oh, the Mets got to get Tarik Skubal. They got to give him whatever they want. You know, here I am on X, you know, fighting with some goofy Tigers account talking about giving up McClain and Benj. And I mean, obviously, look, if the shoe was on the other foot and here we were having this conversation and we were the, Skubal was a Met, we wouldn't be talking about any kind of package other than an overpay of the highest level for the player. Skeens, because of his control, the Pirates could demand that. You know, the Pirates could demand a Benj and a McClain and more for that kind of player. That's why I don't think Skeens is going to get traded. They're not at that point yet. They're not desperate yet. And I still think Pittsburgh, because they have some good pitching, looks at a team like Miami, looks at Milwaukee, and says, I have the analytics and the mind here to do that. I know the owner doesn't want to invest at a level maybe necessary, but you could find value in, with that kind of pitching at its at the point with the Skeens in the rotation, you become a very dangerous team, especially in a short series. So I don't really think Skeens is going to be traded, and I'm skeptical that Alcantara will be traded. And I personally think that coming off of an injury, and as much as Alcantara leading into that Tommy John surgery was a workhorse of innings, and he's an ace that solves a second problem that I brought up in the open, which is innings. I'm not sure that it's going to be easy to trade within division. I know that's an old school way of thinking of it, but if some of these players come back to haunt you, and God forbid Alcantara gets hurt, you're going to have to be watching them 13 times a year. That's not something that historically teams like. I know in the analytics world, things are not looked at the same way. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. So for the purposes of this exercise, I just think the most realistic one, and when I say realistic, I'm not even so sure Detroit will trade them. You know, maybe they decide to go out for it, win a championship, get a draft pick, or see what their season's like. And if a guy like that gets on the market, I know that you're not going to get the same level of packages maybe you get now in the winter. But then at least it gives you a chance to see if there's something that there to your season. And you're going to get a package for sure. Less likely maybe, but I don't think it's a zero chance or a very low chance. Remember, Detroit's a team that was in the postseason and had aspirations of going to the World Series. So you're not dealing with a team that has to trade a guy that's in no man's land. This isn't the Minnesota Twins. This is the Detroit Tigers. So part of the conversation, I think, starts is we don't really know, and we've seen some educated speculation throughout the industry by, you know, from scouts and those who are maybe know that they're going to want some combination of prospects and big league talent that could impact the roster next year. And, you know, what that looks like might be veterans that could help them win now. Obviously, they're going to want players that could help them in the future. And the Mets have both of that. The Mets have that. And you look up and down the roster here, they have a, you know, pretty good offense. Obviously, they're going to need to update their, you know, upgrade their pitching here. Without Skubal, that rotation doesn't look as good. Let's face it, the Mets have to go into any conversation with an elite talent like Skubal, knowing who's off limits. And I have to say, Nolan McClain has to be off limits. You cannot trade a guy that's controlled, that in a small sample size showed every bit of talent and potential upside that you saw a decade ago with DeGrom, with Harvey, with Syndergaard, guys like that. You have to hold on to a player like that. You cannot trade a player like that right now under no circumstances. And I'm not saying he's Tarik Skubal. He's not anywhere near proven that. But he can be a guy that very quickly, maybe as soon as next year, is in the top, you know, 10 to 15 of pitchers in baseball. Now, Jonah Tong, a lot of potential, didn't show as much. You don't want to give up on that either, just capriciously, but more likely. Sproat, not sure there's the same ceiling there. I'm not sure that that would get the job done. And then you have guys a little bit down the line there, the Will Watsons, the Wenigers, the Santucci's, that's more projectability. So I know I've heard names like, hey, the Mets give up, you know, maybe Beatty and Peterson and then a Sproat and another prospect for Skubal. And that's probably more where I would be comfortable doing it. And that's a painful trade. And I think that's the key point here when it comes to getting an ace. And I want to be real straight. As much as I was messing around going back and forth with the Tigers fan on X about the package, and where I guarantee you one thing, whether it's the Mets or somebody else, if Skubal is traded, it is going to be a painful package for whoever gets him. There's going to be some pain. And you may look over, and this might not be Jared Kelnick all across the way or Simeon Woods Richardson pain that you guys all thought you had back when Brody Van Wagenen was trading away players. This might be a player that turns out to be a good 10-year vet, all-star, impactful, that in 6 years, especially if you don't sign Skubal long-term or he gets hurt or the thing blows up, you're going to say, damn, maybe we should have been more measured twice, cut once. But that's part of the deal. Now, historically, the Mets have gone after aces in their history via the trade market. They did it in, and everybody's most recent one is Johan Santana. And that was not a painful trade, if you look back. And what I remember there is it was a whole winter. It was the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Mets, and Santana, in a lot of ways, pushed himself to the National League because he wanted a hit, if I remember correctly. And at that point, they traded Carlos Gomez, a toolsy player. They traded Deolis Guerra, a nice, potentially nice arm. Philip Umber, maybe a major league ready arm. Maybe he was looked at as maybe Sprout-esque, but he turned out to be far less than that. And Kevin Mulvey, who was a back of the rotation guy. And that was a quantity over quality trade for Santana. And he was, at that point, he was entering his free agent year. He was going to be a free agent. So the Mets had to negotiate a deal. You want to go back even further, Mike Hampton. The Mets got Mike Hampton. Mike Hampton was going to be a free agent. Mets needed a top-of-the-rotation guy. Houston got him for Roger Cedeño and Octavio Dotel. That didn't hurt as much. I mean, Cedeño was a big part of the offense. He added speed, and they wound up bringing him back, and there was a lot of deficits in his game. He added speed and power, and he was good in a more of a backup component, 350 at-bat role. Got exposed a little bit as a starter later on. Dotel was a talented pitcher that showed some flashes of talent, but maybe was not top level like other big arms back at that time. And the Mets got him for what I thought was a reasonable deal. And they had to take Derek Bell back, so they got a useful piece at that point. Again, a trade that maybe when you heard about Cedeño and Dotel pinged a little, but you got a pennant out of it. And you knew that Hampton... And maybe Hampton was a slightly overrated as a top-of-the-rotation guy, but when he was on, he was tough. And he was the reason why they beat the Cardinals in the NLCS. He was not giving up a run there. What, giving up one run or whatever it was that he wound up doing. And then you go way back, and this is a guy that had a couple of years left. It was coming off of, a World Series and a Cy Young season, if you go back to the 80s. And for some of you in the audience, he's... He finished, a year earlier, he won the Cy Young in the American League. And Frank Viola was the other big, deadline deal the Mets gave. And the Mets gave up what turned out to be a painful package in some senses because you were giving up a top closer and a couple of good arms. Kevin Tapany became a decent, innings guy, veteran arm. He had a really good year the year that the Twins won the World Series, getting Cy Young votes. David West was supposed to be the headliner, and he never... Mert developed into anything of value like they thought he was, but a solid pitcher that helped them and wound up being more of a bullpen arm later on in his career, a solid lefty out of the bullpen. But the Mets gave up quantity. They gave up a couple of pieces that hurt them a little bit, but Viola went out, was a top pitcher of the National League the following year. If the Mets made the postseason with Doc and Cone and Viola in a rotation, very good shot they would have won a World Series. So the Mets have historically made deals, the point here, throughout their history, that have not really come back to bite them in a big way. This one might. And I don't know what combination, but if the reports are true, and I'll tell this right now, I am not in favor of giving up Benj and McClain in the deal together. I'm actually not in favor of giving up either one of them. And I'll even give you another thing. And I don't think this is going to happen. But maybe with the lockout looming, Boris kind of knows that next year might get wonky. So he might be more inclined to do this. I think they have to negotiate. They have to go back into the history archive and negotiate a 72-hour window with Skubal to get an extension done. Or the deal's off. I don't know if Detroit would agree to that. And I don't know if there'll be other teams with a better package that could swoop in and say, hey, I'll give you a better package, and I don't need that. You never know. The Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox. Red Sox got a lot of system, and they might say, hey, I don't care about losing them. I'll take the draft pick. You don't know. All it takes is one. But I think you have to stay to your plan and your process here. Now, the guy's been real. He had the flexor tendon surgery a couple of years back. He had maybe an oblique scare this past season. He's hovering around that 200-inning mark, so he might be the next big-name pitcher to start giving you those workhorse-type innings. This isn't Garrett Crochet, who's coming off of Little League starts in Chicago for a losing team, which is why I was concerned about giving up the farm for him. This is a legitimate ace, best pitcher in baseball, 1-1-8 with Skeens, that has postseason experience and big game experience. That will cost you, but it cannot cost you your top position and top pitching arm in the system. It can't. Not with 1 year left on his contract. If there's 3 years left on the contract, different story. We'd be having a different conversation. And I understand Detroit says they have leverage. I could hold on to him, go for it. They can. Okay, go for it. Go for it. And when he walks, you get a draft pick. Let's see what that works out. You know? I mean, the Ilitch the son, from what I understand, is not Ilitch the father. Not as much of a spendthrift there. So you have to, if the deal is in the bandwidth of the following, combination of big league ready, useful pieces that the Tigers could use, and you hear about a guy like Beatty that they're looking for. And a lot, you know, the fact that the Yankees wanted Beatty and the fact that now the Tigers reportedly want Beatty tells you that Beatty's got more value. And I think I'm becoming more comfortable with the idea of Beatty at third base. But if you're going to get yourself a elite arm and you're going to save pitching prospects, because I still have questions about Beatty, about his ceiling. I think very good is what you got there. Then, okay, I'm okay with giving up Beatty. Does that open the Mets up for having a third base hole? You know, they got Jacob Reimer, top prospect that may be putting himself into the conversation sooner rather than later. Do they go out and play the free agent market with Suarez, or they get even deeper with Bregman? Not so sure about that. With Beatty on the roster, I don't see that happening. So that's kind of where, you know, if it's, you know, I see Peterson, Beatty, maybe Tong or Sproat. I think Tong would be the painful one. And then maybe another, you know, maybe one of their catching prospects comes in there, a Suero or something like that. That to me is kind of there. You want to throw in maybe power there with Ryan Clifford. You know, you look up there, Jet Williams, of course. I think McLean, Benj, I'd like to put Tong into the untouchable, but I'm not convinced of that. All of those guys, you got to pull off. Everybody else, I mean, I don't know about how Elian Pena is viewed. I know that he's very young. That would be a lower level. So the Mets know these things. I'm not Ernie Dove, our good friend Ernie Dove, that, you know, is clued in on this. I know enough to say that's a package I'd be okay with. But not without that 72-hour window. And you can't get the window. Now, you can say, oh, it's Cohen. He's going to be able to go out there. He's going to be able to sign him and compete with anybody. Next offseason is going to get weird with the lockout, possibly. I wouldn't take that chance. If you're going to rip apart resources and very valuable resources, to me, you gotta get some guarantees. So you go back in history, and history tells us a lot about the future. Mets have done this before. They've been successful in completing these deals. They can complete this deal. Historically, the pain hasn't been that bad. I don't know if you can mitigate the pain, although what I just outlined for you might become more painful than the historical trades they've made in this kind of situation, but is also very Johan Santana-ish, if you think about it. Very Viola-ish, not less Hampton-ish. And we really don't know what the Tigers' philosophy is. Are the Tigers looking to now rebuild? Probably not. Do the Mets have pieces that could help them? Sure. I don't have the whole pie of the Tigers. As this gets deeper into it, we'll talk about that. But conceptually, I think that's where your mind has to be. If it's about an ace, it's Skubal. I don't see Skeens as realistic for anybody. And I'm not so sure Alcantara is a guy that I'd give up the assets for within the division, nor do I believe they will trade him unless it's an overpay. They're going to want the overpay more than the other team, as much as the other teams, because of the history they found and the cost control that he comes with, and the fact that you're trading within division. There'd be nothing more than Bendix loving to do some highway robbery on the Mets. So, all right, it's not just about an ace this offseason. It's also about building out a rotation. Skubal is not going to alone solve all the Mets' problems. It solves a lot at the top of the rotation. You still have issues with innings in the rotation. You still have issues with consistency and performance. The next step is, can this team bring innings into the rotation? Can you trade for it? Maybe. More likely, that's what you could get. Innings and quality on the free agent market. All it'll do is cost you money. Obviously, a draft pick with the qualifying offer. We'll talk about that right after this. All right, we're back. So how are the Mets going to add innings to this rotation? Obviously, trading for an ace like Tarik Skubal is going to do that. You would, you know, you're at a guy at 195 innings. He's about to jump into the 200 inning range. You're not going to blow his arm to smithereens, but you could push him a little more if you acquire a guy like that. But when you start to look up and down the Mets rotation, in best case scenario, you look at what's there currently. Manaea, not so sure he could give you, especially after having an injury-riddled season, how many innings he's going to give you. We don't know the status of that elbow and those bone chips. I think Clay Holmes may have figured some things out in that start against Miami late in the year, using more contact and weak contact. Maybe he could go deeper into games, but at 165 innings is his next step, 175, 180. He's not a 200-inning guy. Maybe that's where he'll evolve to. We'll see. I'm not convinced. Forget about Senga. If you bring back Griffin Canning on a deal, he's only going to be working there out there half a season. David Peterson is the most logical guy. And, you know, those are going to be back of the rotation. I think that's what you're going to get, a league average, back of the rotation, 185 innings. There is value to that. Very Steven Matz-esque. David Peterson is very Steven Matz-esque. And that's, there's a value in the back of the rotation with innings. But, you know, that's also, you have to see what that looks like and what his value is on the market. He's also coming up on free agency as well. So right now the Mets don't have innings. McClain's not going to give you the innings you want. He's going to be up there, but they're going to manage him. Tong, Sprout, anybody that comes up that's a kid is not going to be one that's going to be a bulldog in innings. So what are you going to do? You got to go out and acquire it. And there are three guys that have the potential to be very good in your rotation, but all come with trade-offs. And then there's a one guy that's probably not quite in the Kevin Costner for the love of the game range, but he's starting to point there. But he could give you innings, and but he's probably more of a right-handed Peterson, and I think he's more of an option if Peterson is traded. So let's go through it. The name that you hear the most is Framber Valdez. And Framber Valdez is a free agent. He's a lefty, Houston, top 15 pitcher in baseball over the last few years. And you know, as a lefty, he's a guy that's going to elicit weak contact. He's not going to walk a lot. I mean, his walk rate's not horrible. It's not great. You know, he's not a strikeout guy. And when you look at him, you say to yourself, well, there's a definite upgrade to the rotation. And that's true. And he comes from the Astros system, guy that won 13 games last year, 15 games before prior. He got Cy Young votes. Not who knows what this year he gets Cy Young votes. But, you know, he got Cy Young votes the last 3 years. He's hit 200 innings. He's a guy that's going to give you 195 to 200 innings. That's what the Mets need. And all it's going to do is cost you money. It's going to cost you quite a bit of money, but it's going to cost you money. The question I have about Valdez, and it's a fair one, is if you go to his Baseball Savant page, and I'm not trying to play driveline here. Those guys are way more qualified to understand this stuff than I am. But his number one pitch is a sinker. He's a sinker, curveball, changeup, less of a slider guy. Maybe the Mets changed that a little bit. His number one pitch being a sinker, obviously ground ball guy, and that's the pitch that the opposition hits the most. I mean, last year they hit 285 with an expected slugging of 475 against it. In 24, their expected slugging against his sinker was 451. These are solid slugging numbers. These are hittable numbers. So you're bringing in a guy that his best pitch is a hittable pitch. Now, how is he successful? I haven't watched him at any kind of level enough to say. I mean, clearly he is. He's been able to navigate it, so that's fine. What's the value of a Valdez? Now, bringing a guy like that in, who's probably going to want $25 to $30 million a year at this point, and I don't even know if Spotrix has even looked at his market value. Spotrix has him as a $33 million a year. So you're looking at 4 or 5 years, $175 million maybe, $160 million type of contract. Serious cheddar. Serious cheddar. You got to be right on that. You look at another free agent, Dylan Cease. Everybody's talked about Dylan Cease. I've been always on trading for Dylan Cease. Now, Dylan Cease, unlike Valdez, is a strikeout guy that sometimes looks dominant, sometimes looks like he can't get anybody out. Dylan Cease to me is a guy that, you know, has that nasty slider that nobody could hit, but for some reason, the numbers at the end of the year look much more pedestrian than the stuff. He is a guy that could give you innings. The fact that he's a high strikeout guy to me tells me that when an analytics-based driveline organization, he's going to be a guy that they like. Not many guys will give you 200-plus strikeouts, the kind of innings that he's going to give you. Can he come in? And I don't think he's an ace. And like, make no mistake about it. People think of him as ace. Think of him as an ace. He's going to be a guy that's going to go out there and have stretches where he looks horrible. Can't get anybody out. Mets have hit him well in their time against him. But he's a guy that misses bats. And again, a guy that if you look is going to probably cost you, and I'll look at what Spotrick has here. Dylan Cease on Spotrick is a guy that's going to cost you probably $25 to $30 million a year. They actually have Valdez at a better market value than Cease, which is interesting. I think Cease profiles as the guy with the missed bats as a better play. And he's a slider guy, and I know the Mets like those guys. I see him as more likely for the Mets, to be honest, than Valdez, even though I've heard they like Valdez. But again, same thing, different, you know, obviously a righty, but in the same. Now, I'm not advocating for one or the other right now. I'm telling you, this is the bucket. Now, the third guy, and he's the guy that's probably the most hittable and maybe will not cost as much, but can give you innings, is Zach Gallen. Now, Zach Gallen was a guy a few years ago, got Cy Young votes, was really a dominant player, a pitcher back in 2022, finished fifth in the Cy Young voting. He's much more pedestrian over the last few years, basically looks at a lot like what you get out of a Peterson or a Holmes, actually worse. He had a 4.83 ERA. He was below league average last year. You could probably get him, I think, at a more reasonable deal, a shorter-term deal. I don't think he's obviously going to be a one-year guy. But why is he looking very pedestrian-esque? I mean, he looks like a guy that's going to give you six or seven innings, three and a half runs a start. That's very back end of the rotation. But he's an innings guy. Is there something there that the Mets could bring out? Could the Mets lab bring out? Now, if I had to make a prediction, and you tell me who's the best bet out of this group right now, and I think it's somewhat of a toss-up between Cease and Valdez, but Cease at 29, not having a great season, strikes out a ton of guys, slider guy, he's been below league average two of the last 3 years. I think Valdez will command more because of his performance. I think you could get Cease on a more reasonable deal, and I wonder if the Mets feel that they could do something to bring something out where you see the Cease that you saw in 2022 at Chicago, which was an outlier season when he finished second in the Cy Young voting. That was an outlier season. And everybody's been waiting for that. Now, he wasn't bad last year in 24 with San Diego. I should say the year before. It's 25 is really last year. But that's something to think about. So I think the Mets go after Cease. I think they go after, potentially they talk to all three. But I think that Cease is the guy that fits. Educated speculation, of course, that fits what an advanced analytics-driven organization wants. And now that it's just money, I'm okay with it. I was never okay with giving up top prospects for the guy. Never was. And I think Cease is going to drive you nuts. I think he's going to look dominant. I think there's days that he's just going to be like, and I know that's going to be the case, but right now you don't have a guy who has the upside on the rotation of a Cease. He might be very Kodai Senge-ish, but he'll give you innings, and I think he'll be more competitive. Senga to me is a very uncompetitive player. So that's where you look at the rotation now, and that's where you can add innings. Now, next tier down is an old friend, and I know that I'm going to get a lot of hate mail on this one. But when you look at it, and if you go, you know, over a five-year span with innings, because you got to go look since COVID what the innings look like. Chris Bassitt is eighth in baseball in innings. And I know he was here, and I know he spit the bit down the stretch, just like Scherzer and what have you. But he was a guy that kept his team afloat in 2022 when Scherzer and DeGrom were out. He was the de facto ace. He went deep into games. He's extremely competitive. There'll probably be questions, does he really like New York? I know that might have came up on his way out the door. I always didn't like the fact that that Billy Epler let him walk. I thought they should have brought him back. But maybe he's more Aaron Nola-esque at this point. And I think in a lot of ways, you could argue that Zach Gallen might be more expensive, has better upside, but they're similar pitchers at this point in terms of performance out the door. And he's just going to cost you money. So, you know, when you start to look at innings out there, outside of those free agents, do you go out and try to trade for Mitch Keller, a guy who could probably give you innings? It might be, and he's a different conversation that we'll have after the break, because the next conversation is, can you go and trade for somebody with upside? I don't know if you could do Skubal and that player, but that might be the better play at that point. But when you go up and down, you're to the last 4 years, Logan Webb, Kevin Gausman, guy that the Mets lost out on when the Scherzer situation, Jose Barrios, Zach Wheeler, Framber Valdez, I mean, there's the innings, Luis Castillo, Dylan Cease, Chris Bassett, Aaron Nola, Zach Gallen. Four of those top innings guys are available for money. You got to go out and grab one. And I'm not sure that Bassett and Gallen at this point, you got to look at that with a disconcerting eye. I think Cease is the guy they go after. And I think Cease is the guy they land, to be quite honest, because it's just going to cost them money. And he fits the analytic profile with the missed bats more than Framber Valdez. So you saw my concern about Valdez. We'll wind up, for those that are premium subscribers, I'm going to try throughout the week to organize this for you guys, maybe in writing, so that we could study this a little bit more. And of course, I want to hear from you, whether it be in the chat room, email. You want to contact me over at TalkingMetsPodcast.com on the contact button. I get it all, and I'll either address it on the show or I'll address it to you directly. So, all right, let's take a quick break. The next phase is, can the Mets look for a guy that's about to make the jump? And maybe that won't cost them as much as Skubal. And in the long run, maybe the deal that they could work there with the control allows them to figure out their farm system a little bit more, or maybe use resources elsewhere. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. You know, it's interesting. As I was in the break, there was one name I didn't address, and he's a bit of a tweener because he might be a guy that you could sign that might be able to get the next step, but he doesn't quite give you innings, so there's some risk there. And I wonder if he's maybe a better version of Clay Holmes, and I don't know what Philadelphia's budget is, but Ranger Suarez is out there. Ranger Suarez, if you go to Savant, his pitching metrics are really good. The real issue is you're not getting the 30 to 32, 200 inning starts from him. I don't know if he has that next level in him. And I don't know. And I think he's going to cost you a little bit. And when I look at his, and I'm trying to find him on Savant here. Yeah, Ranger Suarez. They have him at about $25 million. I mean, everybody's kind of the same. They have him like Cease. He might be a better play than Cease in terms of performance. And I think if you told me, do I have faith that Cease versus Ranger Suarez will have a good start? And I think that with Skubal being in play, I don't want too many lefties in the rotation. But you could always see Peterson, and this is a better jet version, way better than Peterson and Suarez. The thing is, he doesn't give you the innings. Now, is that something that he can, at the age of what, he's 29-ish at this point? Yeah, he's actually 30. Can he do that in his later prime? I'm not so sure. But he's out there, and I would be remiss if I didn't bring him up. But we'll organize this for the premium subscribers, you know, throughout the week. This is going to be starting pitching week. I am not getting into the bullpen today. That is a whole other conversation. This is all about starting pitching. So the next thing is, okay, who's the next player to jump? And a name that I didn't bring up that probably, and I don't necessarily think he should be in the same conversation, this first player, as Skubal, Skeens, and Alcantara, because I don't think he's as good. And he had a great 2025. I know he's very reasonably priced next year. He's a free agent. You would probably have to give up some talent. And I don't know if you, in this whole 72-hour window, I don't think everybody is necessarily going to agree to it. But I would like it if you're going to give up top prospects to sign somebody. And I know he's connected to Stearns. But Freddy Peralta, to me, is a guy that is extremely overrated. I'm sorry. Now, yeah, I know he won 17 games. He's an all-star. He's going to get Cy Young votes this past year. He's, you know, 154 ERA plus. But when you go, and here's a guy that started 33 games, but when you go to the leaderboard and you go over to top pitchers here in 2025, starting pitchers, let's just do, you know, let's do starting pitchers, all pitchers, starting pitchers here. And let's one second. I'm kind of screwing this thing up here. When you do this, you know, when you're playing around with all these windows up on your computer while you're doing the show, it gets a little tricky, especially with all this goofy stuff that goes on. But when you start to look at top pitchers, I mean, you guys saw it. I mean, Freddy Peralta, let's just give the facts here. Freddy Peralta is a guy that the Mets handled pretty well in the postseason last year. He's the guy that was a very good player, very good pitcher. But he'll get you 175 innings. He'll get you double digits in wins. I'm not so sure. Take away this past season. I know there's upside. I'm not so sure he's a lot better than Clay Holmes, to be honest with you. I know he's going to give you the 200 strikeouts. I'll even say that's unfair. I'm not so sure he's much different than Dylan Cease. And if Cease just costs me money versus this guy, who I know is cheaper for 1 year, but you could lose him, and knowing that it's the Mets and Cohen and how that owner feels about them, it's going to cost them a tax, I wouldn't touch it. Not good enough. This past year, now is he going into the next step? Is he entering a phase where he's going to be a top five pitcher in baseball? Well, let me ask you this. Against the Dodgers, you went into the sixth inning, gave up 3 runs. Very pedestrian outing. Against the Cubs, he was beat up pretty good in his start that they lost 6-0. He pitched fairly well in the other start against the Cubs in a Milwaukee win. Went into the sixth inning. That's not what Skubal does. That's not an ace. So I'm not, you know, everybody's all Freddy Peralta. Like, calm down. That's Dylan Cease. Think about it. Go look at the numbers. I mean, I think maybe I overstated with Clay Holmes, but if you look at his before this year, he has some very Clay Holmes-esque type numbers. You got to start diving into this deeper than just the name or the recency bias or the media hype. You got to look past it. But is he jumping into the next? That's a question. And if he is, then no. Then he's all of a sudden better than Dylan Cease. Because up to this point, this is his outlier season to a certain degree. Like Cease's season isn't even as good as what Cease did with Chicago, with the White Sox at that point. But the one guy that I really believe is going to jump, and I like him for a lot of reasons, mainly because, and his name is one that has come up before, and he's got a couple of years of control, and he's with a bad team that probably doesn't want to pay him and needs to rebuild, and that's Joe Ryan. And Joe Ryan, to me, is a guy that has all the mechanics. High K rate, solid walk rate. Now, there might be some other things. He's not a sexy name. May not throw the hardest out of everybody that's out there. He may not be getting, you know, crazy chase rates and stuff like that. But is he a guy that getting into the Mets lab, getting away from Minnesota, can potentially be the next Cole that jumps up into it? Now, if you look at last year, and I have to redo the whole leaderboard here over while I'm talking to you guys. He's living in that Dylan Cease world of, you know, bottom, you know, top 25 pitchers in baseball, but he's more towards the, you know, 22 to 25 range in terms of performance. And there might be some, you know, these pitchers are all different, Cease and Valdez and Peralta, but they all kind of fall in that same question about which direction they can go. And where they land is still very, very solid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sneering at any of these guys. These are upgrades for the Mets rotation. Don't get me wrong. But when you talk about prospect capital, you talk about monetary investment, you got to be right. You're never going to be 100% right. There's always going to be a risk, but you got to be right. To me, Joe Ryan is that guy. And I just like guys that don't walk hitters and have high strikeout rates. I mean, to me, those are the perfect guys. Now, innings wise, he's a guy that is around that 170 inning. He's had some injuries. You're going to be taking a risk there a little bit. Now, as far as a package, I don't think that will cost what Skubal will cost. That might be more of a quantity package. I don't think you're going to give up any big league talent. Would they take a Mauricio? Would they take a Sproat? Would they take, you know, maybe a Ryan Clifford? How would, you know, these are prospects that I think, or talents in the case of Mauricio, that could swing either way. I mean, would they take him? Now, he's got 3 years of control, so they have no incentive to really trade him. So you may have to overpay. But he's also getting expensive, and I wonder what that deal is. I mean, he's arbitration eligible, so he's not going to make $3 million. He's going to make significantly more. And I think that the problem here for the Mets is you're going to try to do a very good package, maybe more quantity of prospects, when, if anything, the Twins have more leverage over the Mets than the Tigers do. But he's a guy I'd look at. Another name I've heard throughout the year, and I don't know how that would play if they win the World Series, is a local guy here in New York, is George Kirby. Much more inconsistent. You know, one day he looks good, next day he doesn't. His walk rate, which I think was pretty solid coming up a couple of years ago, has skyrocketed. He seems more pedestrian. He's just, I mean, his whip is 1.19, and he's not terrible. But he's a guy that usually has a very good walk rate. It's kicked up quite a bit over the last year. I'd be curious. But to me, he's another guy at 27. Now, Seattle being a competitive team, that might be a situation where they'll want a prospect, but they're going to want some heavy-duty talent from your big league roster. You know, how that works, especially if they lose. So if Seattle loses a Suarez to free agency, do they look and say, hey, you know, I want Brett Beatty? Does Brett Beatty get something like that done? They lose Naylor to free agency. Do they like Vientos? Do they like Clifford? Do they feel he's ready? You know, what are they looking for from a pitching perspective? I mean, they have a lot of pitching. Do they want a Sprout in the deal? Do they want a prospect in the deal? George Kirby, and he's a below league average pitcher, but is he ready to make the jump? And maybe not even right away, maybe in the next 12 months. So that's another name to look at. Joe Ryan's the one I would really take a look at, but I think that might be more of a painful trade in some cases than Seattle might be looking. I don't know what their thoughts of them are. And can the Mets do something that Seattle can't from a development standpoint? The other thing about Ryan that I think we're, and this is a guy that if he didn't have a history of shoulder issues recently, I think might be similar to Nathan Eovaldi, a very underrated arm that could be, I don't want to say an ace, but he could be more top of the rotation than you think. And the Mets have always hit him well. And I think that he would be much easier to obtain because it's just money. But I don't like shoulders, and I don't think he'll give you innings. And I think you have to worry about, he would, going into last year, he would potentially give you innings. He was known as an innings guy, 180 to 200 innings. I don't know if you could rely on that after the shoulder issues. But that's Pablo Lopez, who has 2 years left at about $21 million per, almost 22. So you get a Joe Ryan deal. You take on Pablo Lopez's money with Joe Ryan. You get yourself a potential starter, maybe a little risky with some upside. You get Ryan. You probably mitigate the prospect cost a little bit. You're still going to have to give up something of value to Minnesota in terms of prospects, but I think you stay away from Benj, McClain, Tong, some of those top guys. You know, maybe you're looking at Reimer. Maybe you're looking at some of the other arms like Sproat, Will Watson, Winiger, Santucci, some of that depth. You're looking at that type of thing. You know, the catching prospects, I know Suero's getting a lot of attention. It'd be interesting how they're viewed. I don't think Kevin Parada is going to get you a lot. I mean, if you want to get a quantity deal, that's a guy that maybe you add in for quantity, especially because like you have some Rule 5 decisions to make, so that you might be adding prospects in quantity to kind of mitigate your Rule 5 issues at that point and sweeten the deal and get it done. So, you know, those are some of the names. Now, Lopez is not a name that's ready to take the next jump. I think he is kind of who he is, and the shoulder gives me some pause. But if it lands you Joe Ryan, can Joe Ryan be ready to jump like Cole did with the Astros? Do the Mets see that? Is George Springer ready to jump like Cole did with the Astros? I mean, they're low walk rate, high strikeout rate guys with talent. Kirby's interesting because Kirby adds, and I think he's from Hudson Valley, if I'm not mistaken, or Westchester. But George Kirby grew up in Rye. Yeah, so Westchester County. And he was drafted by the Mets in 2016, and he didn't sign. So there's that other connection. I know that that's a way different period of time. Yeah, you know, there'd have to be a story behind that. He was out of high school. He probably wanted to go. I mean, he wanted to be a number one pick, a first round pick. So, like, it worked for him 3 years later. But, you know, it's another one that sometimes you'd be surprised how many guys that are drafted that don't sign. Then you look back, wow, the Mets had that guy for half a minute. Yeah, they had him for half a minute. at Orion, New York. So those are some of the names out there. I like Joe Ryan. I'm intrigued by George Kirby. Pablo Lopez maybe mitigates some of the prospect cost. I definitely think that David Stern should look into that. All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap up. But part of wrapping up is not only mailbag, but we're also going to look at, are there those Kevin Costner for the love of the game type pitchers out there? And is it possible that that could be a nice addition to the Mets rotation for leadership, for moxie, to get them through the regular season? And who knows, they may be able to provide you a good moment out of the bullpen or in a playoff game when you need it. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. So part of the rounding out the rotation is, do you go after a Kevin Costner, I call them, for the love of the game, end of the career pitcher? And the two names that come up are Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer. Obviously, Mets connections. I know that, and you guys might call me out on it, and that's fine, but I didn't bring up a Merrill Kelly or somebody like that. I just don't think some of the Shane Bieber. These are pitchers that have value. They may be more cost controlled in terms of not costing as much in terms of length of contract. They're older, coming off injuries. I think Bieber's very Sean Manaea-esque, very Frankie Montas-esque. I think Merrill Kelly is a decent pitcher, but nothing special. That's why I wasn't in favor of them giving up a big prospect to get him. They'll help, but not the first direction I would go, to be very frank on that. So that's why I didn't bring him up. I kind of gave you the guys that I wanted to target. Now, Scherzer, I mean, everybody scoffs at Verlander, and I know he started out like 1-10, but he had it as a guy who gave 150 innings. The Mets could have used a Verlander down the stretch last year. He was 4-11. He had a 3.85 ERA. He's 42 years old. He's still, he's not elite strikeout Verlander. He's down probably about 30% in strikeouts from where he used to be, but he knows how to pitch. He's league average, but he's a guy that I would see. I mean, does he want to pitch again? He liked New York. He's had nothing but nice things to say about the Mets. There might be something there, and he's not going to cost you a hell of a lot, but he's not going to come and pitch for free. Guys like that are going to decide whether they play or not based on, is this a decent enough salary? What did he make last year? He made $15 million. That's kind of what minimum wage is for a pitcher. You want to throw him that? Maybe with some incentives, but that's where he's at. I mean, he's made $419 million throughout his career. Does he want to play or does he not? And it's not going to be for, anything less than what probably he got with San Francisco, because then it's not worth it for these guys to put the time and effort and be away. You got to look at it from that perspective. If you love the game, really love the game, and you're willing to really take a pay cut, maybe. I don't know if Verlander's there. Now, Scherzer, who was recently in the news and, was doing his Scherzer act on the mound, I don't want to come out. That's why he's a Hall of Famer, even at 40. He's a guy that I don't think has as much left in the tank. I think he's very feast or famine in terms of his performance. He's as likely to get lit up and be knocked out, like he was against the Royals late in the year, where the Blue Jays lost 20-1 and he gave up 7 runs in 2/3 of an inning. He's as much be able to get locked out, but he against the Seattle team on the road in a game that Toronto needed, he gets him into the sixth with a couple of runs. Got to give him credit. I think he is definitely going to want to pitch. I think he's another guy that probably is going to cost about $15 million. I think it's in the Mets' best interest to look at these two guys. I think they both had good experiences with the Mets. They enjoyed playing here. They understood what happened in 2023 and why the Mets did what they did. So to me, that's kind of, a couple of ways that you can round out the roster, the pitching staff. So we have on the table options, and we have some ideas. And I think it's a little bit early to throw out a declaration about, okay, this is what needs to be done. But I could say this, going after an ace, they're going to try to do it. And Scooble's the guy. I don't put Peralta in that category. I'm telling you right now, I don't think Skeens is an option. And I'm not so sure Alcantara's an option. Where they could get innings, it's all available for them on the free agent market. It's going to cost them. Which option is the best option that could possibly give you innings and give you the best performance? And to me, Dylan Cease is that guy because he fits a lot of what the Mets want. And I think they're also going to look at biomechanics and health and all that other stuff. Can they go after, in the trade market, the next guy to jump in? Ryan or Kirby or somebody like that? Peralta, to me, falls into that because I think he's got potential, but I think his resume is, this past year, it's starting to come together. And I've also seen him be very pedestrian in playoff situations, including against the Mets. And to me, that's one of those names. What is the cost? And can you get them with some... Now, Peralta doesn't have control after next year. Ryan and Kirby do. And those are a couple of names that I would look at. Kirby's very intriguing to me. And I think because of Seattle potentially coming off maybe a championship, would that be more of them looking for the Mets to help them on the big league roster, less prospect capital? Just speculation. We don't know. And then, of course, the final piece is, do you bring in a vet that could help mentor the staff, be able to pitch big when you need them, like what the Dodgers had with Kershaw, like what the Blue Jays have with Scherzer, and then maybe, I think Justin Verlander, to me, is a guy I'd look at for that. And then all of a sudden, you have a much better pitching staff if you can pull it off. Now, what does your prospect base look like? That's a whole different story. Like, how can you do this where you have payroll flexibility, you still have a decent farm system, maybe you'll take a hit on your top five status. Obviously, you have guys that we're not even talking about that are going to start to emerge. We weren't even talking about McClain a couple of years ago. Look at where he is now. I think it's imperative, like I said, not to give up on Benjamin McClain and your two top prospects on both sides of the ball. It's very important for them to be careful about the kind of offensive prospects they give up, because I don't know if they have quite enough of them right now, but that could change in 12 months. This thing changes very quickly, and I think Stern's imprints on the organization are there. And, he's putting his own guys in. So this is going to be his organization. Trust me on that. It's going to be his organization at this point. There's no doubt about it. He's cleaning out. He gave some chances to those that were there when he came on. And I think he's cleaning it out now. Now, let's get to the mailbag on the way out. So I have a few here to get to. Starting with the chat, it looks like, for the most part, our buddy Red Solo Traveler and our buddy Barry, everybody is all about, hey, the Mets need pitching. Now, our friend Red Solo Traveler wants them to re-sign Alonso and Diaz. We'll get to Diaz next week. But the team needs to get away from these four-inning starts. I think that what happened this year, Red Solo, is an anomaly to a certain degree. It got extreme. It spiraled. It was a bad time of the year for them to fix it. The cost to fix it and the kind of players available didn't meet up, and they were trying to patch it together to get to the postseason. And obviously, it gave them an opportunity to see what McClain had. You might not feel the same about McClain if it was just him at AAA. I might be more inclined to say, hey, put him in a deal, and then you don't know what you miss. So in a way, I know this sounds like a rationalization, but in a way, it may turn out to be a blessing in disguise in long term. Might have saved you or gave you some more clarity on your top pitching prospects about who to keep, who's more of a player that you could afford to lose, even though it might be some pain, afford to lose in a big deal for a Scooble or something like that. And, Barry, and I'll read Barry's comment because he's right. Everyone is focused on getting an ace for the Mets, but isn't the postseason a tournament, as you have often said? So why you give up a top prospect for Scooble that might guarantee you dance ticket but only helps you one to two times per playoff round? Better round out the team so you can have your best hitting defense to help you in every round. Okay, but not a one-year rental that only guarantees a dance ticket, but nothing else. I tried to, summarize that. Okay, Barry, you're right. That's why I put the 72-hour window with Scooble. I think they have to be really careful with something like that. I think it's a must. I don't think you want to play with fire with him. I mean, yes, I know it's Cohen. I know he has the most money. You want him to commit to New York. You want him to commit to the Mets. Cohen and Boris have a good relationship. This could work. Obviously, the Tigers have to have a play in it, and the Tigers have to agree to it, and there could be other teams in the mix that give better deals or similar deals that don't require it. I don't know why, and they might say, hey, I don't want to deal with this, because if it falls apart, they're left holding the bag here. So to me, that would be it. But I agree, Barry, and here's the thing, Barry, and this is where if the Mets want to be with the Dodgers, because their player development's not there, it's starting to get there, is not there, they're going to have to spend money. And look, the Dodgers are spending big money every offseason. If the Dodgers go out and get Kyle Tucker, every offseason they're trying, for the most part, last year was Sasaki, to get a big name added to the already insane payroll with the deferrals they have out there. I mean, I've heard they're over $500 million when you put the deferrals in there in terms of actual cash outlay. This is what your competition is doing. Do you want to be the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference of the 80s who the players, you know, could never get past the Lakers, or teams that were playing for good Western Conference teams that would go up to Pat Riley on the bench and say, get me over to L.A. because I can't beat you? Do you want to be how the Knicks were to the Bulls in the 90s? Do you want to be Cleveland when the Yankees were going through their run? Do you want to be how the Patriots were? You want to be an AFC good team when the Patriots were going through their run? You can't just wait for them to get old. You have to go after them. If you're going to beat a champion, you got to deck them and take them out. And it's hard, and you're seeing that now. And what Cohen's going to have to do, Barry, is he might have to do both. Is he ready to do that? Well, he's got a casino coming up that he probably will get approval for. I think he's willing to spend. I think that he's got to stop worrying about them hating him. They're going to hate him no matter what. They're going to hate the Mets no matter what. The media is not going to give the Mets a break no matter what. And, I mean, he has his finger on the pulse of where collective bargaining will go. But the rules are the rules now. I'm sure there'll be a transition. They're not going to all of a sudden change the rules and then have teams just give up players. There might be some grandfathered situations. But if there is going to be some kind of restriction on transactions, here's your chance to set yourself up. But you got to do it in a way where you don't rip apart your farm system, because that could become a bigger part of winning, even more so than now, after 2026. And that's where money comes into play. And that's why you have potentially some guys like Cease and Valdez that we talked about. So thanks for that call. Ben Ryder, and I haven't got into this yet, Ben Ryder, our friend Ben, emailed me, what do I think is, you know, what is my thought on the new hires? Jeff Albert's the hitting coach, Kai Correa is the bench coach. You know, Ben brought up some great points. He thinks that there was mixed messages with the old coaching staff, dated messaging from the old coaching staff, particularly Chavez. And Correa has some bench coach experience. There was a lot of potential deficits in Carlos Mendoza's in-game management. There was some. I think people make more of it than it really is. I don't know how egregious. I mean, sometimes I think the pitching situation was as much Hefner and the game plan than it was Mendoza, because I don't think it's just Mendoza. Obviously, he has to take accountability. Hefner took the fall. From what I understand, Hefner took the fall a lot for the walks. The walks have been an issue for a while. I don't know if that's Hefner's fault, because driveline's all about stuff and not command. So I don't know. Again, I'm not clued in enough on that. But here's what I'll say, Ben, about the hires. Jeff Albert and Kai Correa are, forget about who they are individually. You could go to, Albert's got a website on hitting, and Kai Correa is a guy that under Gabe Kapler, you know, analytic, you know, is out in Minnesota, you know, analytics-based guy. The Mets are going to modernize themselves. They're going to purge themselves of any of the old school, in my opinion, leftovers that have been throughout the organization. They're going to be a driveline-centric pitching organization, and you've heard Ernie Dove talk about it. He talked about it on his great subscribing prospect site. He talked about it on my show. You can subscribe to Ernie's website. It's a great site. Follow Ernie on X. And, you know, they're going to be about hitting the ball hard, exit velocity, launching the ball. That's what they're going to be as an organization. That's where everybody's going to go. That's what they want out of the players they bring in. That's what they want to teach the players that are here. Now, veterans, you don't need to teach Soto that stuff. You don't need to teach Alonso that stuff, Lindor. But they're there. You know, you got somebody who could communicate something to them that will help them. That's all they're there for. This hitting coach is for the young players. The Alvarezes, the Beatties, Benj, Jet Williams, the guys coming up, Jacob Reimer. That's who this guy is for. And if he's able to communicate and work with the veterans, even better. I didn't like the whole social media thing. If he thought it was bad in St. Louis, what do the fans blame him for the first slump? I think we blame and credit coaches way more than we should. The Mets now have a pitching program. They have a hitting program. They didn't have that a decade ago when Matt Harvey was there, and they were relying on Dan Worthen and his marketing of his BS Worthen slider. They were awful. The biggest sports Greek tragedy maybe in Mets history, outside of trading Nolan Ryan and the midnight massacre of Seaver and what happened with Doc and Darryl in the late 80s Mets, is how they did not leverage that pitching staff with modern thoughts. Because that might have been scary, that pitching staff, if they actually had good coaching. Because I don't think they had good coaching at all. I think they had you want to talk about old school? They had the oldest of old school watching over a Maserati, an Aston Martin, and they didn't respect that. They got, you know, they got to a World Series, but I don't think they had a program. Now they have a program, so I'm not as inclined to criticize the people in charge. You want to criticize the programs, that's different. Here's my thought, Ben. The whole clubhouse thing that everybody talks about, I think if the coaches were not on the same page, and if the coaches were not on board with the organization philosophy, and they were struggling with analytics, which it sounds like John Gibbons was out there saying, I think that's your clubhouse problem. Because if the players don't feel they have a good support system, that could cause you some issues. And Stearns was very open. And I always say this about Stearns. He gives you the answers. You have to listen a couple of times. But when he's in the press scrum and he's always one-on-one, he gives you the answers. He said something about getting coaching that better supports the players. And that is something that, you know, they are obviously doing. Where the pitching coach situation will go, I've heard Desi Drusel's name out there, who was the bullpen coach. And the best part about the Mets is these hires happen. Nobody knows they're going on. It's not like when the Will Puns were around and there was this big thing about the manager and this big thing about the pitching coach. Like there was like it was almost like you know, American Idol. Let's they have an interview here. Nobody knows what's going on because they don't leak. And I think that's the way it should be. Wake up one day and you see who the pitching coach is, you talk about it. And that's that. So, you know, thank you again, Ben, for that. I'm willing to give it a shot. Look, you have Stearns as the president of baseball operations. This is his show. What, are you going to fight it and complain about it? Let's see where it is after his five-year contract is up. You got the next 3 years will tell me if this is a success. And if it's a bomb, like some people fear, then you're going to be rebuilding in 3 years. And that is worst-case scenario. I just don't see that happening. It's not a 0% chance, but I just don't see that happening. Allison, reach out to me over at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And if you want to do that, you could also send me on the contact form there. It'll get to me. And I just wanted to read Allison's message. So first of all, hi, Mike. I hope you got this message. I'm a 68-year-old Met fan who has no computer or printer right now. That's probably a good thing, Allison. My apartment was flooded, plus I have been in and out of the hospital. So I'm really, first of all, the fact that you're able to take time to reach out to me and you have all that going on, take care of yourself. I appreciate you taking the time, but take care of yourself, Allison. Nothing worse than both of those things, you know? The only reason I mention this is I listen to your podcast all the time and I really appreciate your insight and ideas. So you're the one, Allison, right? I don't quite know why you seem to dislike WFN so much, but I actually stopped listening to it when they dropped the Mets and essentially forced the older host to retire. If this goes through, I'll be happy as I am too old and technically, you use the word stupid. I wouldn't use that, Allison. There's nothing stupid about being technically challenged to rely on social media. Probably a good thing. Just wanted you to know you have listeners who may not be able to reach you per se, but who like your podcast. Well, first of all, Allison, this made my day to hear that I have this wide variety of diverse fans listening. Take care of yourself. I hope your health is okay. I hope your apartment gets cleaned out. Nothing worse than your space where you should be safe and just relax and enjoy yourself being invaded by the elements. It happens. And, you know, as far as my WFAN thing, I think you answered why I dislike WFAN. I think that they got away from the great old time. I mean, the guys that like me who listened to WFAN back when it started in 87 through, I think analytics opened our eyes a lot to how bad some of the content was on WFAN. Let's put it that way. As you started to read some of these independent minds and these podcasts and people who were doing, you know, really good subject matter expert work, you realize how bad the content was, how it was more entertainment and agitation than anything. Now, I think that they had some of that back in the late 90s when they did do reporting and did break stories. I think as they got more competitive with all the different ways of media evolving, they fell behind the most. I know they made some changes where they tried to make it more bro-ish, more hot takes. I mean, you know, go on, and I really believe the demarcation line was Craig Carton. Craig Carton is the worst thing that ever happened to that station. Not only is he a bad guy, and him and I don't like each other, and I don't care. He's a bad guy as a host. He's a bad guy outside of this thing, and I know people have said how great he's been to them for their career. He's just a bad guy. I mean, he was arrested and went to jail, and the fact that he actually gets jobs after that when most of us would never sniff any job, you know, tells you how broken the industry is. For the fact that the guy calls Bryce Miller the other day when he was criticizing how the Yankees got eliminated by the Blue Jays and how they threw a how they couldn't hit the Blue Jays a journeyman like Bryce Miller. You clearly don't know the game. You know, everything is about, you know, in the moment. Let's scream about the Mets being eliminated. Let's not take context. So I think a lot of what I see is meathead content. I know it's hard. What they do is very hard to do 24 hours a day, to be a subject matter expert in every sport. It's hard. I'm not saying I'd be better at it, but I would do something different. They wouldn't want that. I'd want to have a balanced, logical show. I'd want to talk about the issues. I want to understand why things are happening and walk the fans through that bridge I talk about. And to do that for every major sport, look, I could do it with the Mets because I live and breathe it. And I know about the farm system, and I talk to people who are plugged in, and I do a lot of educated research. At least I think. You guys might not. It's very hard to do that across all the sports. Very hard. And each sport is different, and each sport's conversation is different. The way you talk about the NBA, you can't just template baseball, and there's components of baseball to do it. So to be fair to them, they are victims of a world that's changing and leaving 24-hour talk radio behind because of podcasting and because of written content. But a lot of what I do and my style was born, I grew up listening to WFAN. So for me to say I hate WFAN, I hate what it's become, and I've grown apart from it. And truthfully, I don't get a lot of value in most sports talk shows because I feel like, especially if they're talking about, now if it's I listen to NBA radio the most because I don't have the time to invest my own research in a sport that I love, and I love the Knicks. I need help there. So I rely on people that are like me in that sport that are on NBA radio. I love Justin Termini. I get a kick out of Scalabrini and Isola. That's where I spend a lot of my listening. I also listen to world news because I want to keep up on the important stuff in the world. I try to listen to audiobooks. So WFAN just doesn't fit my life anymore. I'm more diversified in topics. I mean, this, what I do, you know, in this little world, this little tiny world with the Mets is, takes a lot of work. And I've been able to work it into the flow of my life and have a balanced life, and that's not always easy. So it might sound like an excuse, it's a reason, but that's not always easy. But Allison, look, I'm going to send you an email directly. You did give me your email address. Look out in your Yahoo email for my response, and I might have something for you. So anyway, I want to thank you for reaching out. And that's all I got. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast as we lay out the rotation and how I like to see David Stearns tackle the rotation. We gave you some names to look out for. As things develop, we'll dive deeper into those names. There might be names we're not talking about that are bringing up that we're bringing up. If you're a premium subscriber, and there's no obligation, obviously, if you want to just sign up over at the newsletter, you can do the free subscription. You get involved in the chat, which is probably more robust during the season, but we'll try to see what we get going as we get closer to the winter meetings. But this week, we'll dive deeper into this pitching thing over at Beyond the Mic. I'd also like to start to look at the arbitration guys because that's going to play into the the roster. I'd like to look at some of the AFL guys, so that's something that I'm going to be trying to incorporate into a future show because they could be playing a part even if it's on a depth basis and into next year's roster. There's also names on there we might start to have to get used to that might become more solutions. I'm not saying they're stars, but they could be solutions in some way. So pay attention to the Arizona Fall League. When the Mets send guys there, they tend to have some reason to be there, whether it be to add them to the roster, become a depth piece, trade piece, whatever it may be. So we'll look at that. But hope everybody enjoyed this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets OG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Of course, you could get me at the all new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get the chat there. Sign up for premium content. Contact me just like Allison did. Have at it over there. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody. Be the Mets. Be the Mets.